life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabe, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey friends, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Each week, I endeavor to create for you a useful resource, and I think today is going to be really special in that it's hopefully going to be something that really you can use if you need it. I hope you don't need it, but I'm talking to my new friend, Brandy Lidbeck, and she has a ministry called The Gift of Second, and it is for survivors of suicide. She lost her mom to suicide when she was 10. So she kind of goes through what that was like, how the grief of suicide is different than other griefs, what it does to the people who are left behind. She went on to become a licensed therapist, so she is able to talk about it in a clinical way, but she still sees the need for people to know they're not alone. So I just love her heart. She's also really funny in a very understated way. And the topic is obviously very heavy, but I wish you could have seen the video because she was really cracking me up with some of her facial expressions. So if I start laughing in a place that seems inappropriate, just trust me that you're not seeing what I'm seeing. I'm really drawn to and thankful for, and have a special place in my heart for people like Brandy who are willing to charge into the hard places that no one wants to go because she sees that no one's there and someone needs to be there for these people. So that is Brandy. Hopefully, like I said, you don't need this resource, but please tuck it away because you literally never know when suicide is going to touch your life or the lives of people that you know. I'm gonna do a really awkward and hard gear shift right now though, and thank this episode's sponsor, Jelly Telly. Jelly Telly is the only streaming video app designed specifically for kids, where God is real and His word is true. It's so simple to watch Jelly Telly on any device that you have, and it's completely ad-free. We personally pay for a monthly subscription, and we have for years, and my family really loves it. If you visit jellytelly.com today and use the coupon code MSW in all capitalized letters, MSW, this is just for Mom Struggling Well listeners, and you get your first week for free, plus a free Jesus coloring pack, which is like a downloadable coloring book pages for your kids. You can also find the link to it in the show notes for this episode at momstrugglingwell.com. Make sure to check them out. I'm sure you're going to love Jelly Telly as much as we do. And honestly, we can protect our kids and pray for our kids and do all the things we can possibly do to make their childhoods as magical as possible. But life is hard, just like the topic we're talking about today. And for them to have a solid foundation of a worldview that points to God is only going to help. So Jelly Telly is a really great way to supplement what you're already teaching your kids. And listen, if you're new to the faith, it's a really great way for you to learn things in a way that is very easy to understand and enjoyable as well. All right, so buckle up. We are going to have a really hard but good and necessary conversation with Brandy Lidbeck. Hey, Brandy, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Okay, so will you tell us a little bit about you and your family?
Sure. We live in Northern California, married going on 9 years on the 4th of July. Really? And I know, exciting. And we have 3 kids, 2, 4, and 6.
Okay. Are they boys or girls or what?
All boys. Okay. And so it's loud and a lot of wrestling all the time.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, a lot more crying than I thought.
Okay. I would have assumed that would be mainly girls too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just crying about everything. He hit me. He looked at me. He, you know, And so I'm not much of a crier.
So that must be difficult. Yeah.
Yes.
And why is looking causing you to cry?
Yeah. Well, they're constantly like, he looked at me. He said, he laughed. He did this. He did that. I'm like, ignore. So my 5-year-old always says, he always says, ignore, 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 ignore. And I'm like, that's not ignoring. That's just being.
That's being obnoxious. My 5-year-old says, I'm being noxious. I'm like, well, not exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Kind
of. Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, so you said that being a mom of little kids is not exactly your jam.
It's not. And
what did you say? Some moms seem to thrive, but you are close to a straitjacket. I loved that because I feel you.
Really? Good. Because I feel horrible all the time when I think that or say that.
Nope. And as my 8-year-old starts to get a sense of humor and can understand funny things, I'm like, I got you, girl. I understand what's happening here. I like you better every day.
Mm-hmm.
So there's hope.
Yeah. I'm just kind of over diapers and snot and having a hard time blow their own nose and dropping everything they pick up. You know,
sucking in is not the same as blowing out. Get the memo.
Yes.
Blowing out your mouth is not the same as blowing out your nose.
And he always puts, one of them always puts his Kleenex to his face, but doesn't close one side of the nose. So it's just blowing. Nothing. Just does nothing. And now you've wasted 75 Kleenexes on nothing. So now pick those up. Don't drop them. Throw them away. I mean, it's just the same. A Groundhog Day is really what it is.
It is. It's tricky, you know. And then all the grandmas tell you the days are long and the years are short. And that's, you know, that's true. There's got to be. You can't see her, but she is shaking her fist. Oh, yeah. It gets intense in the moment.
Yeah. I don't want to wish this day away or tomorrow, but man, I love the idea that my 2-year-old will one day be in school all day.
It'll happen.
But I love my kids.
No, I know. And I love my kids too. Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to talk to you today because you have a particular ministry to people who have lost people in a traumatic and tragic way. So I wanted you to tell about kind of what you do, but then I also want you to talk about how did it come to be something that you do? How did that become a personal thing for you?
Yeah. So I run a website called The Gift of Second, which is for anybody who's lost someone to suicide. And there's so much done on the prevention side. Let's talk about how we can prevent suicide. And there's chat lines and phone calls and hospitals and all this stuff that helps prevent, which is so necessary and needed. But once a suicide actually happens, there's not much support there for people who are left behind. And so I started a website for people to kind of just talk about their journey since a suicide, but have it be encouraging and hopeful to everyone else in the community who's also experiencing a suicide as well.
Okay. So how did that become something that you wanted to do?
Yeah, it was never really anything I wanted to do, but my mom died by suicide when I was 10. And then when I was 27, my cousin came home from Iraq, in the army, and he also took his life. And so our family's been devastated by it. And I don't think we did a great job of talking about it and kind of, plus when my mom died, it was 1991. And so there wasn't internet. You couldn't just Google survivor, you know, support groups. There was no such thing. You had to call up 1-800 number or something.
Okay.
So
what was that like for a 10-year-old? Talk to me about that.
Stunk. Plus I found my mom. And so there was a ton of trauma and a ton of being so scared of life, you know? And I just remember specifically if my dad was late, my dad's always on time, you know, but if he was picking me up and he was 1 minute late, I thought, oh my gosh, he's dead. You know, just so much trauma and so much PTSD and so much fear and not trusting anyone, you know, it was just hard. And then also a lot of shame, you know, if my mom could kill herself, what does that say about her? What does it say about us that she could just leave, you know? And so I kind of took that on for many decades, honestly.
Are you the oldest kid?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest. Okay.
Yeah. But my brother's 6 years older, so he was kind of out of the house pretty close thereafter, you know?
Okay. What did your family do to kind of sort that out afterwards?
Nothing really. I mean, I think we kind of we moved instantly because I couldn't be in that house anymore. You know, it was so traumatic.
Yeah.
So we sold the house within 30 days and we're at a new school and a new town and a new everything. And so once those like pictures came off the walls when we moved, they just never went back up. And that was kind of like synonymous with like how we handled it. Like, we're just not going to talk about it. We're not going to, I think my dad tried to get us to talk about it, but it was so heartbreaking. And, you know, like I told someone recently that anger is like a secondary emotion behind like hurt and sadness and fear. And so I just kind of went with, I'm going to be angry because it's easier to talk about than how devastated I actually am. And so I just was angry and, for lack of a better, like, screw you, mom, for 20 years, you know, and just never talked about it. And just like, I want nothing to do with her. And that was kind of my coping.
Yeah. Did it come out of nowhere or were there signs?
Nowhere. She was a high school English teacher and also taught a class for kids who were at risk. So she was working with kids all the time who were depressed or at risk of flunking out of school or, you know, abandoned or abused or whatever was going on. And so she was kind of like the last person on earth that we expected this from, and just kind of, I mean, it was mind-boggling, you know, when it happened.
So how do you pick up the pieces with that when it's so unexpected? I don't know. Not that that would be easier if someone kind of had a tendency toward that, but if it's so out of the blue and you're 10 and you found her, like,
yeah, it's a lot of strikes now that you just named them like that.
gosh,
you know, it's just hard. You kind of just go through, and I think a lack of trust for a long time with anybody, you know, like, how can I trust anybody if my own mom peace out, you know? Yeah. I mean, I didn't tell anybody until like 13 years later. I just allowed people to assume that my parents got a divorce because I was so ashamed and so embarrassed and so didn't want people to talk about it. Like, it's not your story to go gossip about. Like, there's kind of this voyeuristic thing that happens, or like a morbid curiosity, you know, when somebody hears about a suicide, it's like instantly you get the questions of, did you know they're going to do it? How did they do it? Why did they do it? Did they leave you a note? And I'm like, dude, I don't want to answer those questions to just like appease your curiosity. So I just didn't talk about it at all.
Okay. I'm glad that the same questions come up so that you can, like you said, go second. Is that what it, I'm sorry, what's it called?
The gift of second.
The gift of second. So tell me more about the name of it. Why is that a gift?
Yeah. So I ended up writing this blog for another friend's blog about 2 years ago now. And I'd never really talked about the suicide. And she just said, hey, I'm asking some friends to write a letter to your younger self. And I was like, oh, I'll do that. Didn't really know what I was going to write, but it just came out of left field, I guess. And I wrote a letter to my 10-year-old self. And I just wrote, speaking to that girl who was so mad and so scared and afraid and devastated. And I just kind of spoke to her about how life will definitely get better. You don't see it now. You know, you'll end up having a good family and good kids and, you know, but just kind of speaking to what that little girl needed to hear.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wrote it and it ended up doing really well. It was like her most popular blog that year. Okay. And it kind of just started the ball rolling. But when that blog was written, a bunch of people commented on it saying, what a gift. What a gift for someone who goes second after you, you know? And so that's kind of how it started, is because when I was 10, I had nobody ahead of me who had ever experienced a suicide. And so I was like 10 and alone trying to figure out this world and also have this huge suicide. And so the gift of second is the idea of, I've been there and I'd love to take someone who's behind me, you know, just going through it now. Like, come, I'll show you the way. I'll show you this journey, you know, I'll kind of guide you on it. And so the gift of going second behind someone who's been there before, who's walked this journey for 26 years, you know?
Yeah. How did you come out from under all the shame? Like, what made you finally start talking about it?
A lot of therapy, because shame doesn't just compartmentalize itself. You know, it kind of just breeds into every area of your life. And so really kind of going through life, hating myself, and not, you wouldn't know it because I was top 10% of my class, athlete of the year, you know, like all these things that were really great, getting my bachelor's and master's degree with honors. And you'd think like, whoa, she's got it all together, but really just hating myself so much. And I think when your mom kills herself, and it felt really intentional because the rest of my family was out of town. So it felt like it was kind of like a,
wow,
you are going to be the one to find me. And I'm okay with that. And really thinking, if she was okay with me finding her and it felt like she was protecting the other family members, like, what does that say about my value or lack thereof? So really carrying that for decades and just kind of having to kind of move through that and say, her suicide says nothing about my value. It only speaks to the mental place that she was, you know, her mental illness or that we didn't even know about. But it just speaks, if that's like the best of her bad decisions, then that kind of speaks to where she was at and says nothing about my 10-year-old self. You know?
Yeah, and it's just a snapshot of her in a moment. And it kind of made a mark on you for
forever. So I think it's totally, I think it's always going to be a struggle that to kind of have to like speak the enemy, you know, like speak those lies away and be like, dude, that's not truth. That's
Yes.
That's something that probably she wasn't even thinking about, and the enemy is kind of used to attack for a lot of decades.
How does that affect your parenting?
Oh, man. So many ways. I try not to use shame in any capacity. It's hard because I think that's also what I speak to myself. So I catch myself,
yes,
you know, the kids who are crying, I'm like, you're crying again. But I realize, like, even in that statement, that's a shaming statement. So I'm constantly trying to be like, Brandy, you can't use shame in any capacity. Not that I want to, but I feel it coming out in my own verbiage, you know?
Yeah.
In the book, I wrote a book this year, and it's funny because on the, like, acknowledgments, you know, at the end, just thanking people for the book, I wrote in there to my kids, like, you make me want to be the mom I wish I had. I pray my actions never cause you to doubt my love or your worth. Hmm. And I think that's kind of just really what I want. I want them to know that they are loved and they are valued and they matter no matter what I'm going through or this poor decisions I might make, that, man, that speaks nothing to your value because you are loved despite my brokenness.
Yeah. Gosh. Do they know about your mom? Like, what do they think about your ministry in general? Like,
so we haven't even mentioned that we call it the S word, my husband and I, suicide, because I just think, like, at six, he's not old enough to, he's my oldest, you know?
Yeah.
So they know that she died. And I think as they get older, I'll just tell them a little bit more, like, maybe, you know, her brain was sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then as they, I mean, eventually they'll know the whole story, but at 2, 4, and 6, we can't even touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. I forgot they're that little. Tell me about what your book goes through. Is it tell people, like, the stages of grief, or what does it do?
Yeah. What does it do? So I wrote the book kind of with one goal in mind, is to create the best possible resource for anyone who's experiencing a suicide. Kind of like, I wish somebody would have handed this book to me when I was 10. Although it's written for more than 10-year-olds, but just in case you're listening. But it goes through, like, the PTSD, what that's like. And I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist. So I'm not just kind of pulling this out of the air, like, oh, it sounds like, but I'm actually a licensed therapist. But okay, it kind of talks about a lot about the path of grief and what that looks like, and guilt and shame and trauma and PTSD, and then forgiveness. That was a huge one for me, of having to get to a place of forgiveness and holding on to that anger for so long. It's just a lack of forgiveness. You know? Where was God in all of this? Like, support groups and therapy and what that looks like, and how to find a good therapist in your area. And just, it kind of covers everything. One of the coolest parts of it is I interviewed, like, hundreds of other survivors and just had them give their best advice for someone who's just now experiencing a suicide. So there's an entire chapter that's just them giving their best wisdom and best advice to a new survivor.
Okay. Did you find that a lot of it was similar?
Yeah. It was like repeating over and over again. But that speaks to, I'm not alone, because I went my entire life, you know, or entire first 13 years thinking, I'm a freak. I'm the only one I know that's ever experienced a suicide. I'm feeling so alone and so much shame already. And so to hear these people saying the same things was like, oh, that speaks to my heart. And we can't be the only two that speaks to, you know, it's got to speak to the masses, because although they might be different circumstances, they're very much the same. A family member chose to leave Earth permanently, you know?
Yes. I guess I never thought about how it would make you feel that you somehow caused it. Yeah.
So, I mean, some of the common questions that people wrestle, like, suicide's such unique grief because they wrestle with, what did I miss? You know, what could I have said to prevent it? What could I have done? Did they not know that I loved him enough? Was I not valuable enough? You know, there's all these constant wrestling, like, hindsight 2020, and you play back every single conversation you've had with them. Like, did I miss that? Was that a clue? Did I know that they were going to do it? If I didn't leave the house that day, would they still be alive? You know, there's this constant, like, man, it just devours you. And so to hear thousands of other people saying the same thing is like, okay, I'm not alone. I'm totally not alone in this.
What helped you finally forgive her?
That's kind of always been the ongoing thing. Like, I feel like I forgive her, and then a few years later, something will come up. And, you know, like, when I get married and she missed my wedding, or when I had my kids and they weren't there for my, you know, at the hospital. Or it's kind of like sometimes forgiveness is not just a one and done. It's like a constant thing, you know? Like, I have to forgive her today because she's not going to be, you know, at the birth of my kid. Or I have to forgive her today when, you know, fill in the blank, because life keeps going, and there's times where she should have been here and she wasn't. And so I have to forgive her again and again.
Okay. And I think sometimes we feel like that means we failed and we didn't forgive before,
mm-hmm.
but we have to realize, yeah, it's okay. gosh, it's just so, I'm just so sorry. That's so sad. So tell me about the community that's formed around this faith, really the blog, right? Or the Facebook. The blog started.
Mm-hmm. So the blog started and it kind of just took off. Like, I was expecting like, hey, it'd be cool if like one or two other survivors out there in this world, like knew about this website.
Yeah.
But then it took off to like thousands and thousands and thousands of, okay. you know, a month checking it out. And so, which is really sad because there's 117 people a day in the US that kill themselves. So if you look at just each one of those persons, family members and neighbors and coworkers and friends and spouses and kids, like that many people are being affected each time one person dies by suicide, and there's 117 every day. So the number is pretty far reaching. And so then I just started asking people, hey, would you do a video for the website? Would you do, write in it? And there's like strict rules that I have for people writing because I don't want anything graphic. Like, yes. It's not about the person who died. It's about the people who are left behind. And so I don't want to know so how smart. They did it or yeah. why they did it or what it looked like. Cause that's triggering, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to know the stuff leading up to the person's death, like their mental, we don't need to know that because we can't change it. It's out of our control. Okay. So what I do want to know about is what are you struggling with? What has helped you? Like what, let's talk about lack of forgiveness. Let's talk about how angry you are that they're missing your events. Let's talk about the good stuff, like what you do to honor them, if that's something you want to do, or, you know, whatever it is that just kind of talks about your journey that could also provide encouragement and hope for others.
Yeah. Are people who have lost someone to suicide more likely to also commit suicide?
So, I mean, there's numbers that kind of, statistics kind of go both ways. Like the research is kind of, but as a therapist, like that's one of the questions, like if someone's kind of showing signs of talking about suicide, one of the questions is like, hey, have you lost anyone to suicide? Because there's the idea that maybe they're a little immune to the, you know, like maybe a person who hasn't experienced it would say, whoa, I would never do something like that. That's so crazy and outlandish, but someone who has experienced it is like, it's not so crazy and outlandish because we've actually walked through it before, you know?
Do you have to kind of protect yourself when you're in therapy sessions with people who are suicidal? Like, how do you take care of yourself while you're working?
Yeah, thankfully, I have not really had any folks who've ever, my whole practice has been addiction. Okay. And so I haven't really had a ton of, or people married to addicts. So I haven't had anybody like talking about suicide, which is good. But I mean, you'd have to go forward with treating them however, you know, need be.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I just didn't know if you could be like, yeah, no, this isn't my jam.
Yeah. That would be a liability if I was like, well, good luck with that.
Well, that's a really good point. I am a nurse. I should know better than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I sent them to you.
Yeah. You know? Oh man. Okay. So do you ever have days where you're just over this being your main thing? Like, I'm a mom podcaster, and it's really not my favorite topic. Like I said, for you, like, I know you're laughing, but it isn't. But listen, it's hard for a lot of people, and no one's talking about it. So it's kind of like you, where you're like, these people are alone, and they need help. Sometimes I don't want to talk about being a mom anymore. And so what do you do on the days where you're just over this as your main thing?
Yeah, so in October, I released the book, and the day it released... I just like, babe, to my husband, I have no more words about this subject. Every word and every thought and every feeling that I've ever thought or felt is in that book. I have no words about this topic. And I took like 3 months off from even like, I had a few deaths happen in the end of last year. And I just kind of used that non-suicide related, but use that time to be like, I'm going to go do this and not do anything with the website. So there was like a break for the longest time.
Okay.
Just because I'm like, I'm exhausted and I can't talk about suicide anymore, you know?
Yeah. What are you seeing God do with the community?
I think some of the encouraging stuff is just seeing people be like, hey, I'm not alone. That is huge because that's a battle that I have fought my own, you know, on my own for so many years. And so seeing people kind of, you see the comments after each blog and they're like, whoa, I've thought that same way, or I can completely relate, or I felt like you were saying my exact same story. And I think that when we know that we're not alone, there's just so much healing that happens in that alone. Like even if, I mean, I totally recommend therapy, but if you never get to therapy, just knowing that there's other people out there that you're not freakishly alone, that's so powerful.
What was your thoughts on God? I mean, how did you reconcile all that?
That took a long time. I think immediately after I wasn't a Christian when my mom died, but I think because of my mom's suicide, that actually led me to the Lord through Young Life years later. It's kind of a couple women stepped in and were like, hey, we'll hang out with you. And I think that was just kind of like me desiring so much to have a mom figure. That I was like, hey, I'll hang out. I'll do Bible study. I'll do whatever. What do you do? Just hang out with me. And so them just sharing the gospel definitely brought me to God. But I think so much lack of trust was such a part of my story, because how could a God that is good allow a 10-year-old to go through this? And why didn't you prevent it? And how can anything good come from this? And so wrestling with it for years and years and years. And so it'll come full circle, but I sent out a survey to a bunch of survivors, like saying, hey, what topic would you want in this book? Like, what would you want to have covered? Okay. And they were like, not all Christians. Like, I'm sure most of them were not Christians.
Okay.
And I was expecting like trauma or grief or whatever. And most of them said, how could a God allow this to happen? Mm-hmm. And the other one was, is my loved one in hell? Because he mm-hmm. killed himself, which is kind of like that old belief.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I guess we're going to talk about this in the book.
Okay.
That was the chapter that I revised the most, changed it, just would do the whole, select all, delete, and then start again, and then do it again. Like, nah, I'm so close. It was the last chapter I wrote, even though I started it 27 times. But then in the end, it really ended up being, and I felt good about it, and it's probably one of my favorite chapters, is like, the question cannot be like, how did God allow this to happen? But who is going to heal this broken heart that I have? Because I can't fill it with anything else to fill that void. And so he didn't prevent it, but he is the one that's going to heal me. And so I kind of have to move forward with like trusting that he is good despite what happens on this earth. You know,
yeah.
He's good despite our choices that I make or a broken mom makes or, whatever, fill in the blank that our stories unfold, but he is good. And so he's the only one that's going to heal. And that's kind of like a more recent, like, I have to trust. I have to put my hands out and just say, I trust God that he is good. And he's the only one that can heal.
Yeah. Is there like a fear of suicide for survivors? Like, do you ever on a really bad day of being a mom wonder if you're going to? Is that a dumb question? I'm just curious.
I don't think it's a dumb question. I think a lot of people, like, you know, I'm in a ton of like Facebook groups, let's say, for people who have lost one to suicide and they struggle. The struggle is constant. Like, you know, a lot of survivors say, I just want to be with my loved one. I hate this world. It's so hard to be here. I'm so devastated, full of grief. I just want to join them.
Yeah.
And so you hear that a lot amongst survivors. I don't necessarily have that struggle today, but I also know that I'd be naive to believe that there's not some sort of, just like the sins of our fathers, you know, like where it gets passed on generational to the next generation. And I don't think I'm susceptible because my mom did, but I think that I think depression could, you know, just kind of follows the lines. And I think if I ever got to that place, I would very much need to be like, hey, I need to get some help. You know, I need therapy because I know where this could lead, you know, because I've seen it twice in my family now. So I've walked through it with my own therapist several times over the years of like, hey, I don't know if being alive is the greatest thing on earth, you know? And so having to like, hey, let's closely monitor this, like, because we know that your family has a history of this, and let's be honest about it, because I want to get help unlike my mom. So if I ever get to that place, because I have three little kids who are smiling at me and I love, even when they're obnoxious,
noxious.
I don't want them to ever grow up without a mom. And that's like my driving force of like, let's make sure that you grow up with a mom who, you know, loves you desperately.
Did you ever wonder if you wanted to be a mom at all after this experience?
I don't think I really ever wanted to be a mom until, cause it's just so much work. I could just see that. And kids like never stop talking.
So much touching.
Oh my gosh, the touch. And I would go over to my Young Life leaders' houses and their kids are like, mom. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can never have kids. And it really is like that. You know, you're like, oh my gosh, I just answered you 75 times and you're still answering like the same question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a real good question though.
But clearly.
Yeah. So you didn't know if you want to be a mom, but it wasn't because of your mom. It was just because of
kids.
Just because of kids. Okay. So how do you, at the end of a long, you know, whatever you're doing with your blog or, you know, interactions with that, how do you take care of yourself and just go do something else? Because that feels like it'd be hard to get out of that headspace. Or are you always in it? I don't know.
Negative. Okay. No, I'm not always in it. Like
that doesn't sound healthy.
You know, like when I was starting the blog and writing the book, I was really in it. And so a lot of stuff would come up for me too. As I'm like writing the forgiveness chapter, I would, you know, stuff would come up to me for me, or writing about the trauma or the, you know, this or that, kind of triggers a lot of stuff for me. And so I was seeing my own therapist as well and kind of just dissecting it with her. But my husband's fantastic. And so he is really good. Case in point, he's not here right now. He has all the kids, but
that is fantastic.
It is fantastic. He'll be like, how about you take the day off and go do whatever? And so I do that a lot. And sometimes he comes home from work and I'm like, I'm going to be in our room, the door shut for like an hour, and they don't need to even know that I'm home. So he's like, okay, see you later. Because okay. You can't, I'm going to be in that straitjacket, you know, if I, mm-hmm. if I'm with them 24/7. I love my kids, to anybody listening. I do love my kids.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just so exhausting, you know?
So just take some time off. So good. Yeah.
Go out to like lunch with girlfriends, or I think I was telling you that a couple weeks ago, it was just like nonstop yelling in my house. The kids were like, ah! And I think we had one that had croup. And so we were in the ER all night, and it was just like, oh my gosh, you're not sleeping on ever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just went to the grocery store to like get milk. And I ended up just sitting in the parking lot with the windows rolled up, the music off, my cell phone off. And I just sat there in pure silence for like 25 minutes. And it was like the most amazing, like, oh. People were probably like, why is this chick staring at us? But it was so great to just sit there in silence.
But moms walking by were like, solidarity. I know. I got you. I get what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. They're like, I join you, but that means we'd have to break our silence. So.
But I know you don't want that.
Yes.
That's so funny. Oh man. Listen, that's a lot. How can people get your book?
Yeah. So it's on Amazon. It's on okay. Barnes and Noble. It's easy cheesy. There's a cool little video that I made, like a video trailer for the book, on thegiftofsecond.com. And you can go and check it out and check out the website. There's some videos in there, and the video does a good job of like kind of just showing the heart of the book and kind of those internal struggles that every survivor faces after a suicide.
Okay. How did you feel when you first released the book? Like, I've heard authors feel like, oh my gosh, now people are actually going to read it.
Honestly, when I wrote it, I was like, this is the best book out there. I've read a million books, you know, and some of them are too triggering. They talk about all the details of the suicide, and some are so long, and some are, you know. And so I purposely made it under 100 pages. That was my goal, because someone in grief can't really like plow through 450 pages on.
Such a good point.
Yeah. So I made it specifically like under 100 pages so you can get through it quickly. And I was just like, I trust that this is the best book possible for it. So I'm just going to put it out there and hope that it's received well. And the coolest thing is, it's like it's been adopted by like several national suicide support loss,
no,
you know, groups.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I get emails all the time with like, oh, I wish I had your book X amount of years ago. And so that's a really cool and fulfilling, like, okay, if no one else reads the book ever in the history of, you know, all time, then at least I know that a few people could be like, oh, wow, that's exactly, you know, what I needed. So
that is so neat. And I know you don't know me, but I'm just so proud of you, even though
you're
like, who are you again? What's your name again? No, but that's so good. Thank you for doing that, Brandy.
Yeah, it's been a joy.
Yeah, well, that's it.
You got me.
Okay, so it's a very strange and abrupt shift in gears, but what can you not stop talking about these days, Brandy?
Well, I was gonna, there's a few, I mean, I think I told you about a few albums that I really like that I just like love dancing to, that they come on and you just can't, even my kids are like, you know, kind of bopping their heads.
So what
I'm reading is, yeah, so like Walker Hayes, do you know who he is?
No.
He's kind of like a country, but he kind of just got all popular all of a sudden out of nowhere. And he's got this song about the dollar store, and he's taking
that doesn't sound like a country song.
But he's like a fast, like kind of like hip hop, but he's country umbrella. But he's got this song about the dollar store. He's going to take his girlfriend or wife or whatever to the dollar store, and like she can get whatever she wants.
Oh gosh.
And like, it's just funny, everything he like, it's funny. It makes me laugh and it makes me dance. So, and then Mercy Me has a new one out called Lifer.
Okay.
It comes out this Friday. And that's a good CD. I'm kind of dancing to that all the time.
So good. It's awesome. No, it's great. Thank you, Brandy. You're just giving me like, I don't know. Was that the right thing? It was the right thing, Brandy.
Okay,
so perfect. Said the right thing.
I passed.
You passed. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So fun. Well, thank you again. Thank you. Thank you for all the people that you're helping, and it's just really good and hard.
But yeah. Thanks.
Have a good night. Yeah, I hope you have a couple more minutes before your kids come home.
Oh, man. I'm glad we're ending this early because I'm just going to sit in the silence for like another 13 minutes.
So good. Soak it up, girl.
You too, because I don't know if your husband's back.
Well, I don't know. Their kids are still running around wet and naked, and who knows what's happening. I hope they're still in the house is what my big hope is. So, all right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye. Man, right? That was not easy. I edited out all my awkward noises when I said I'm sorry a million times. Those are not easy stories to hear, and I did not know all of that before we started talking. So, yes, very sobering. I think for somebody such as myself, and I know statistically a lot of you as well, depression is hard, and you can start feeling really hopeless, and you can start feeling like you not being around would be better for your kids than you being around and messing them up. I know that that is a thing because I've thought that myself. And when you love your kids so, so much, all you can think is that you desperately do not want them to be jacked up, right? And when you, like she was saying, shame, it doesn't compartmentalize itself. It just kind of covers you, right? And you just want out. You feel completely like all the crevices of who you are is touched by shame, and you just feel like you are bad, and you love those little kids so much, and you just look in their little eyes and think, I don't want you to be hurt by me. And so I just want to speak a word of truth to you. If that's where you're feeling, hear Brandy's words. Hear how it affected her so much worse to not have her mom around than to have her mom around who wasn't perfect, right? Because none of us are perfect. And the actual truth is that who you are is loved and completely worth it, worth life and a second chance and a new day, and that it is not over, and that is not true. If you believe that it is, certainly we can believe that it is and feel like 100% sure that it is because of our feelings. And our feelings are absolutely real, but like my pastor at church always says, they are not reliable. So they're really good indicators that something's not quite right. Listen to that and make appropriate plans to get help. But let's not make suicide one of those options. So what will y'all's strategy to struggle well be this week based on what Brandy said? I would check out her book. It sounds like a really fantastic resource. I'm so thrilled that everybody's adopting it and using it for the wonderful tool that it is. Maybe you look up that dollar store song. I personally need to hear that because my kids love the dollar store with every fiber of their beings. Brandy hit on how important it is for a little girl to have a mom figure. Maybe there is a little girl in your life who, for whatever reason, doesn't have a mom around, and you can, I don't know really what that would look like, but pray about it and see if you could somehow incorporate her into what you've got going on in your own family with your own kids. I think it would really mean the world to her. I loved when she talked about Young Life, those women who welcomed her in. Maybe you look into seeing what you could do with Young Life. I've only ever heard fantastic things about that organization. All right, sweet ladies, please come find the Mom Struggling Well community on Instagram. Find show notes and any ways that I can possibly think of to have you help support this show at momstrugglingwell.com. And as always, go ahead and use the Amazon affiliate link that helps out this show by going to momstrugglingwell.com/Amazon. Do your shopping like normal, but a tiny portion of what you are already spending on Amazon goes to supporting the costs associated with producing this show. That really helps me every single time you do it, and I so, so appreciate it. So to be completely honest, I am exhausted, and I am missing a movie night right now. So the way that I'm a struggle well is to peace out of this place and go eat some popcorn and sit on the couch with my fam. So I hope y'all have a great week of struggling well.
It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.